Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind-body medicine and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Hello. Thank you for welcoming me. I can use it. When I'm ready, I'm laughing, but I'm laughing at myself. I will be 92 the 14th day of this month, and it is like being reborn to get older. I never thought of it that way, but I think that's a good way of looking at it, because you have to create a new life as your body changes. I say, you know, and your brain is part of your body, so all those things are happening. And I never forget when my father said out loud, "I need to get out of here," and my mother said, "Help him out of, you know, the room." I said, "Well, he's talking about his body, not his, the room he's in." And that's something that I've reached, that stage, so to speak. I'm 92. I'm still functioning very well. No, I'm not allowed to drive. I mean, the state takes your license away and other things. But, yes, and I do walk around with help because I had fallen. When my wife died, my heart went crazy and I lost my balance and fell, and that's what triggered off a lot of things. If I hadn't fallen, I'd be a different person. But the secondary effects of the fall, you know, led to balance issues and other stuff. Obviously, I can still talk and think and do a whole host of things. But you can't put me behind the wheel or let me go places with the same freedom I had before. And I get tired now, too. That's another part. You know, I can talk. It animates me to want to help people and do things, and so I get energized and talk. And then I'm exhausted because it's like the motor was on 100 miles an hour for, you know, minutes, I don't know, it could be 10 minutes or an hour. And then I feel the depletion because all that stuff has been put out. And then I need my nap and my rest and so forth. So I'm readjusting. And I think we all go through that in life. You know, you grow up. Your body is changing, giving you new things to think about and do. And you have to make decisions. So I'm in that stage now, and I think I'm getting closer to a point of saying no, thank you, you know, that I don't want to do something. I'm not going to feel guilty, you know, not saving lives. People have copies of my books, my lectures, all kinds of things. So if they're interested in my message, they know how to get it and work with it. And that's the part that I'm grateful for, too, that we have books, we have tapes, and I have a computer where people will contact me, and we do run groups, support groups, through the computer or through the telephone, where we all call the same number and talk to each other, but we're not in the same room. I don't have to go anywhere to help people. And that's a gift, all the modern technology. But it's also kind of crazy, all the things in the world you need to do to keep things going. Another issue today, I have a whole bunch of books that I've accumulated in years, hundreds of books that are useful. And I don't just want to give them to the town library where they get stuck on a shelf and nobody may know they exist. So I've talked to veterans groups that come and pick up your books and, you know, can give them out to people who can, you know, different organizations who can use them and know what the content is and make sense in donating it to them. And so I'm working on that now. But again, it's, we have boxes of books, and boy, are they heavy. And you have to work out picking them up, both physically as well as in, you know, a car or truck to deliver them to various organizations and things. And we're working on that. And again, when you're 92, you get tired a little faster than you did at 29. So it's not so easy again. You start making plans and you feel what it's doing to you. And what can I say? I care about people. I want to help people. That's been a big part of my life, and frustrating when it isn't so easy. And not everybody acts as if they understand you. That's frustrating as hell. I mean, you get help, and then they're busy criticizing you, telling you what you should be doing versus what you are doing because of your patterns and your ways. And why am I telling you all this? Because someday you'll get to where I am, and then you'll find it as frustrating. Is there anything wrong with feeling good, taking a nap, or just lying down, or sitting outside in the sunshine when it's a nice day? And the frustration for me is more of not keep making it a better world. When I see something that I'd like to improve, even today, something simple and crazy. We're getting into the fall. The windows in our garage have been wide open. You know, you wind them and they swing out. So I want to close it now. It's the fall. Whether it will get cold or rain, or you don't want to go in the windows or snow. But I know for me to go out and do it is hard. So a woman here named Paula, who's helping me and keeping an eye on me, I asked her to go out and close the windows. And to me, that's frustrating. All the things that I'm used to doing, whether it's closing a window or planting a tree or cutting a tree down or, you know, making the world a nicer place and trying to do the right things. So, that's probably what we ought to all be trained to do with our lives. Do the right thing. And you want to know what the right thing is? That I've learned how to find out by drawing a picture. Think about, and especially if you deal with your kids in this way, if they're graduating from high school, college, whatever, and aren't sure what they want to do, say, draw a picture of all the things that you're thinking about. And give them crayons, full box, all the colors, black, white, brown, and the rainbow. And then sit down with them and look at it. See? And it's no different if you said, if they said to you, Ma, I got two girlfriends, I don't know who to marry. Fine, draw yourself with each girl. And then you pick out the one that will make a better mate for them. And the same with the job. You know, if the job looks like hell, no, I wouldn't go have that. And that's what in the reverse, helped a lot of cancer patients that I took care of. When they were told they were going to die in a certain amount of time, they changed where they worked or their attitude towards it. They moved. They did all kinds of things to be happier. And then literally, they either got well or their, you know, the time they were going to die that their doctor told them wasn't true at all. You know, you'll have 2 years to live, and 2 years later they were feeling fine. because their body got a different message. Monday morning, more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. But what if you loved your job? What it brought to you? Then on Monday, you'd get up with a smile, give your family a hug and a kiss, and head off to work. Yeah. I didn't have a problem bringing our kids into the operating room to see me. I mean, I'm laughing because they used to say to me, why do you lie to your patients? I did a lot of children's surgery. And my lie, my classical lie was, with an alcohol sponge that cleans your skin before you get an injection. But if I had a child who didn't know what it was, I'd say, this is made to clean your skin, but now they have invented new ones that clean your skin and make the skin numb so you don't feel the needles anymore. And literally, I'd say 90% of the kids would look up at me and say, oh, thank you. Why don't the other doctors use that? Because they believed in me, had faith in me, and believed what I told them. So don't be afraid to hypnotize the people you care about and love. And I mean that seriously. You could say, I'm telling you to lie to them. But if you do it in a healthy, caring way, they're not going to get mad at you. Because, you see, if you rub them with an alcohol sponge and they say, oh, I felt it, then you can say, oh, they didn't make it right. They did something wrong with it. So it wasn't your fault. Yeah, when I operated on one of our children, and I told him, you know, he'd be comfortable when he woke up, and I injected a lot of local anesthetic when we finished to make the incision less painful, because this was more than I could do with local alone. he woke up, he said, I still feel it, you know, and I said, oh, they must have had a bad solution, I'm sorry, you know, it didn't work. Because I had told him he'll be comfortable when he wakes up and everything's all right. Because when people believe in you, it's amazing how easy it is to hypnotize them and flip their mind over and remove the fears from it. So don't be afraid. I'm going to say to lie when it's therapeutic lying. Because all the stuff I was doing really changed the operating room and the hospital while I was there, because they saw the benefits it brought to patients, and then nobody was against things benefiting patients. So then they started, you know, making up stories and doing things, and it gave them more power. And boy, did they get a kick out of that, you know, that they were to help everybody and do that. And don't be afraid. Oh, yeah, because if you do something and they say, I felt it anyway, that didn't work, say, oh, they must have made a bad solution. So what I drew out didn't work. I'm sorry. You can always blame the company. And then go on. And, you know, where your mind is, the rest of you follow. When your mind is in fear, see, that's the danger of it all. When your mind is in fear, the chemistry in your body shifts to that fear. Well, I keep getting back to my wife, to walk into the bedroom to wake her up and find that she had died in her sleep. I had heart trouble within a minute. soon as I touched her and realized she had died, the pain in my chest was incredible. And it was a lesson for me that I had to understand about my patients, that they're going through things physically that I need to be prepared for and help them with, not just say, oh, don't worry, don't act like that, that's nothing, you can't help it, blah, blah, it's not your fault. You have to understand this is something that is related to chemistry in their body that is triggered by their brain and the thoughts and feelings that have come with the experience. And that's why you want to be a survivor. You have to think like a survivor. It's not, you know, acting stupid. It's surviving. What do you do when you're feeling something and you can't, in a sense, take a pill and make it go away? You have to create that pill in your brain. And that's the part that always impressed me. How some people got through things with so little trouble. And then there were others who had all kinds of just horrible results. And it was, I realized, their attitude towards it and how they feel about it. And when you look at your family, you can see, you know, who cares about the other people, who feels good when you can do something for someone else, who feels like your family's a burden and you have to make meals or go shopping or have a job and pay the rent, and somebody else who says, yeah, I'm here to love everyone. So those are my ways of doing it. And they don't see it as work. It's a gift. It makes their life meaningful. And those are the messages of time and of religion and of everything else. But it's also, is that message in you? Are you the one who wants to do it? And I'm talking to myself, believe me, because I'm a tired soul with all the things I've done for so many years. And now I probably could say I enjoy doing nothing, no thing more than doing a thing. I mean, if I'm doing something and I see how it benefits you, yeah, I feel good. But it could be when you called me, the time of day, what it took, didn't make me happy. And, yes, but when I see you smiling or thanking me or sending me an email, then I say, oh, I'm glad I did that. And that's why I'm still, I keep saying I'm 92, but I'm still here talking to all of you. And it's a tough decision to say no. But there are always things to do in life, so I can say no to one thing and do another thing. It's hard for me to be creative anymore, though, because I've run out of fuel. I love painting. It made me feel young and healthy again. Yeah, when you do something you love to do, this is the best medical advice I can give you. What do you love doing? If that became the profession by which you earned money and made a living, you'll have a wonderful, happy, healthy life. Because you're never going to be working. You're always helping the world to be a better place. And that I've learned. But when you're working, when I have to go to work, what's it going to do? It'll get you sick faster. Why? Because then you can call up and say, I can't come in today, I'm having a problem with my health. And so then, what do? You stay home, and you do what makes you happy. Those are the words that are very powerful. do what makes you happy. Not selfish. Not do what makes more money. Do what makes you happy. Then the finances take care of themselves. Believe me. And you start meeting people. That was another thing from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Used to say to me, Swiss accent, Bernie, there are no coincidences. That's a hard thing to believe, that there are no coincidences. Who you meet, who you sit down next to when you go somewhere, all kinds of things. But I learned, it's amazing, when you keep an open mind, how there are no coincidences, and the people you meet have something to offer you and teach you and help you with. You know, I've told the story about the guy whose car broke down, and I saw him looking unhappy and confused on the, you know, on the street, so I pulled my car over to ask him if I could help him. And he told me he had been fired from his job, was on the way home, and his car breaks down. It's like, what else is going to happen to me? And then another car pulled up to say, do you guys need help? Do you want me to call a garage to get somebody for you? And I said to the fellow, he just lost his job, and on the way home his car broke down, and was trying to figure out how to get him to a garage and how to, you know, help him and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, I know a garage nearby, and he called it, and they were coming to get him. And then he said to the other fellow, what did you do? What kind of job did you lose? And he told him. And the answer just verified my belief. When he finished telling his story about the job he lost, the other guy said, oh my God, he said, I can't believe that. I run a business and I'm looking for somebody who does what you do. I'm looking to hire somebody who does what you do. So he gave him the job. So how do you have a terrible day? Your car breaks down and you get hired for a job that you were just fired from as well. So keep that in mind. There are no coincidences. When you keep that in mind and an open mind, it's amazing the people you meet and the things that happen versus getting angry and bitter and nobody wants to be near you and you end up sitting in the dark. There's nothing that helps you. So turn on the light and turn on the right.
Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed, in the middle of the night, when you can't sleep, or in the morning, fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love, Magic, and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of five children, and grandparent of eight, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, and I think that with time, with life, what we really end up getting more involved with is the value of our time. Because it is our life. And how we spend it each day is so significant. Yeah, I'm sitting here in a chair, holding a phone and talking to all of you. And I could be sitting outdoors, relaxing, taking a nap. Who knows what I could be doing. But what gives my time meaning? That's what I would ask all of you to keep looking at. How do I want to spend my time? How do I want to spend my value? I don't mean the word money. It's not just something mechanical, but it's how do I respend what has value? A better way of putting it to me. You think about that. That's your life. And I know when I'm doing things that I need to get done and it's not of any great value to me, but just, you know, life, that I'm more likely to be grouchy and complaining and things like that than I am doing things I like doing that make me happy. Because what you find is, and I mean this literally, that when you're doing what makes you happy, time changes. It moves more slowly in a healthy way, because you're spending it being happy. Now, at the end, you may think it went very quickly because you don't like to have the good things end. Whereas when you're involved with something that makes you miserable, you're there 15 minutes and it feels like 2 hours because you're not happy. Whereas when you're in the joyful moment for 15 minutes, it just goes too fast. But think about what is contained in your joyful moment.
and keep filling it up. That's why, over and over, I keep repeating, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? What kind of job do you want to have? What do you want to do for other people and for the world? And how do you feel you've been treated by your parents? How many kids have the courage to walk up to their parents and say, I don't like how you're treating me? You've got a bad perspective. I always remember one that was, you know, a terrible thing, but I learned one of our kids had a bone tumor. After I'd been telling him to take a hot bath, I thought, now he'll probably lose his leg and die, and oh, my terrible judgment, I should have gotten an x-ray. I mean, he's 8 years old, and he's telling me I need an x-ray. And when we had it, he was right. But one of the things I always remember him saying, once I had learned about the x-ray, I told all our siblings, five of them, our kids, to go to your room. Your brother could be dead in a year. And stop acting silly and making noise and running around. And he came to me. Dad, what is it, Keith? You want us in our room, depressed. Why can't we be in the front yard playing? And boy, he was such a good therapist for me. And that's not the only time he's been my psychiatrist. When I think I know what should be done, and he comes up to me and literally as a kid would say, Dad, you're handling this poorly. I mean, that used to blow me away when this little pipsqueak comes up, Dad, you're handling this poorly. I mean, one of the times was about a patient of mine who I was so upset about. I did a lot of children's surgery, and this kid I thought was going to be dead in a short time. And to have to tell his parents and him, and oh, it was just. And that's when Keith came over and said, Dad, you're handling this poorly. And boy, did that straighten me out. And so did the outcome for the child.
Yeah.
And Keith is a massage therapist now. And he started coming here once a week again to massage me. And just being with him for, you know, an hour or so. And the touch of his hands, and oh boy, what a gift that is to healing me. It's a pleasure. And that was something he chose to do with his life. I would have directed him in more professional ways, you know, to do different things. And he wanted to be a therapist. And he sure is good. He touches you with the life in his hands. And whenever he touches me, I have a better day and less pain and everywhere. So don't be afraid to be touched, massaged, loved. You can be touched in many ways. And don't forget to touch your kids. That is the most important touch, I'd say, in the world. Touching children in a loving way. Not whacking them or spanking them, but touching them with a gentle hand. A massage, a hug, and watch what happens to them. And we know that is so true. And I'd say even test it with your pets if you want to. Watch how they do when you pet them, when you give them a treat. I get a lot of love. We're down to two cats now, you know, not 36 creatures like in the old days when I had the kids here to help me take care of them. But the two cats love me. I can feel it. And when I say love, I don't mean they have to like you every minute, you know, if you're not doing what they want. But that they come will jump into bed or where you're sitting or whatever, and you can feel the love and pet them, and they give you pets in their way. So get yourself something furry. And it doesn't have to be furry. I mean, you could have fish in a tank. A lot of studies have been done. They make you feel better, too. When they swim over to you to get something to eat, you know, when they're in the tank and you go walking by. It's amazing to me how all these creatures are thinking and trying to communicate with you. So keep communicating and let them know I love you. Yeah. And I've told a lot of these stories before on the show, but it's, you know, when we hatched eggs of all these creatures that were growing and living around our house, ducks, geese, chickens, they all thought our kids were their parents because the eggs hatched in fish tanks we had, you know, glass tanks. And they saw when they popped out, oh, there's my parents. But it was our kids, not their parents. But our kids had, you know, all this love from all these creatures. And I'd say the same thing is true of furry creatures. If you're the one who delivers them and they see you, okay, you're mom and dad. And they're there to be with you and give you that love. And I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And my grandparents didn't want animals in the house, except my grandfather ran a poultry market. So there are times we had chickens in the kitchen, but he wouldn't let me have a dog or a cat. And it was crazy. It took a long time before finally I got a dog. That I think I found them in the street and brought them home. And they let me keep them. But it was hysterical how he was taken care of. Because we didn't take him out for a walk. My mother would lower him out of the kitchen window on his harness. And he'd go pee in the garden behind the house. And then she'd pull him back in. But she didn't take him for a walk around the block. But anyway, he knew he was loved, and the kitchen was his place to be, but he made me happier anyway. But he didn't stay very long, and I knew they were lying to me, you know, that he was sick, and oh, they had to take him back to the vet, and blah, 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 and I knew that wasn't true, but I knew they just didn't want him in the house, so... After a while, where I was very happy with him, he got returned to wherever it was he came from. But I wasn't in charge of the house then. But once I was with my wife, because she loved animals too, we had every creature you can name, you know, of all sorts, from fish in the tank to birds flying around the house. And all kinds of reptiles and mixed animals. And because the thing that was really funny was once the veterinarians began to learn how many animals we had, you know, we needed them when they came to the house. Every time somebody said, I can't deal with this pet anymore, and he'd say, well, let me call Dr. Siegel, see if he'll take it. And I don't think I ever said no to all the veterinarians who called me about these animals, because I found myself learning from them. And I've told this before on this show, that when one of our patients said to me that she had a dream and this animal appeared and told her, it was a cat, my name is Miracle, and said in the dream, my name is Miracle, and this is what you're to take to treat your cancer. And the woman literally went to the oncologist the next day and said, I had a dream last night. This pet appeared, the cat, said, "My name is Miracle, and this is what you should take for your cancer." And the vet, thank God, said, all right, it's not a bad choice, I'll try. Because he wasn't thinking she was going to do very well with the type of cancer she had. But she responded beautifully and was cured. And so when in the door walked one of our kids who rescued a cat at a garage, I said, "Her name is Miracle." And she stayed and became a miracle. They're so intelligent. See, that's the part that really surprises you, how incredibly intelligent these creatures are. And that's why I gave her the name Miracle, finally, because I mean, she seemed to know everything, and you could take her everywhere, and I mean that literally, and she always behaved. I never had trouble with her. She's the one I talked about, and I'm not going to tell you it again, when I entered her in a dog show. And that's just because I knew how peaceful she was and how comfortable with everybody. Put a cat in the middle of, you know, 100 dogs, and she has a nice day. And she was the hit of the show. But I do have to say that the next year the sign went up that said, "For dogs only." I mean, it said dog show and advertised. And at the bottom of the advertisement, in big letters, it said, "For dogs only." Instead of saying, "Siegel, don't do this again." And everybody had a kick out of that. And I honored and respected the veterinarian for not being bitter and resentful, but having a sense of humor. So have a sense of humor. You will live a longer, healthier life if you're happy. Because it changes your immune function, your circulation, everything. I mean, think about it. If I had walked in to wake my wife up, found out she was dead, and thought, "Oh, thank God she's at peace now." You know, if she had been having some horrible disease with lots of pain and suffering, I would say dying is the best treatment. But I didn't feel she was going through that. She was a sick lady, but she was still my loved one. But I know she's still my loved one. And as I say, her number, birth date 99, is still showing up everywhere. And she tells me when she wants to give me a message, something with nines in it, either on the computer or in the clocks around the house, and I know to keep alert. So look for messages from our Creator and your loved ones.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors. And their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now it even gets better than that. Because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, everybody. I always get a kick when somebody says, we're back. I don't know who Bach was, but I always think of him. I always say, you know, we're Bach. So, remember that. And you can be as confused as I am. But don't ever be afraid of that. What I say to everybody is, when you have odd experiences, tell them to others. And somebody will say, oh, I remember, I had that happen. And then the two of you are no longer crazy people. See, you're not isolated. Now you both had the same thing happen. And then others may show up with something. So share your experiences, because then you open people's minds and you help others. You know, even, I mean, I keep thinking as a doctor, if you give somebody, oh, there's no hope for you, everybody has that dies, that kills people. I always said, I don't mind deceiving people into health. You'd say, how do you do that? They get a disease and they're told there's no treatment for it. And I'll come in the office and say, oh boy, are you lucky. I just read this in a medical article. They've come up with a new treatment for you and what you're dealing with. And I'm going to get some for you. And yes, and the person responds dramatically. Now, when do they stop responding? Often, if a report comes out, you know, a final report on this new treatment, it is of no benefit, that's when they die a couple of weeks later. But if it came out and said, this is really beneficial, it has saved more lives, oh boy, this is a new treatment, and we're going to use it, you know, the medical profession is saying that they're going to use it, what a difference. What a benefit. And a lot of people stay alive. You know, what we call the placebo effect. Because it's changing the chemistry of the person who's getting it. And, I'm always thinking and mentioning, what's his name? Oh, a Russian author. He wrote about a hospital where they're treating cancer ward, I think he called it, by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And this sentence he said in the book, when I was reading it, and boy, that really struck home for me. There are cases of, see, one of the men says, I found this book, let me read this to you. He's talking to the other guys on the ward. There are cases of self-induced healing. Not recovery through treatment, but actual healing, see? And it was as though self-induced healing fluttered out of the great open book like a rainbow-colored butterfly. They all held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch as the flu passed. Only the gloomy Potiev, who was the hopeless and obstinate expression on his face, croaked out, "I suppose for that you need to have a clear conscience." Boy, when I read that, here's an author, I presume he had cancer, to be that smart and to say all those things. There are cases of self-induced healing. You see, but you walk into a doctor's office and they say, "Oh my God, you've had a spontaneous remission." That is so stupid to say. Why don't you say to the patient, "Your cancer's gone. How did that happen? What did you do?" Because then you can say, "I'm going to pass the information to my other patients." Yeah. We ought to, as a matter of fact, that would be wonderful if we kept statistics on the cure rate of different doctors with patients with the same diseases, whether it's heart, cancer, colitis, anything, and said how many patients in your office got well this year, and compare you to other people. And if more of yours did, we could say, "What did you do?" Maybe it was just sitting in the office with them and saying, "You're going to do well. You're going to be fine. You'll be all right." You know, that changes your chemistry too. So, you know, I've told so many stories about people who were dying, but didn't want to die not liking their body and their lives. And so they change those things. From being naked in front of a mirror and loving themselves to, you know, get a divorce, change your job, move. They all did something. And then when you called up and said, "How come I didn't get invited to the funeral?" The person I thought was dead answered the phone. And I've said this one before, when he moved to Colorado to die in the mountains. "It's so beautiful here, I forgot to die." And it's people who changed their jobs, changed how they dressed, just all kinds of things that made them relax and be happy. And then their body said, "Oh, you're enjoying things now." Because you literally change your immune function and everything else. If you laugh, your immune function improves. If you're depressed, it goes down. So that's why Monday morning is a bigger problem than a vacation day or Friday when you know I'll be off for the weekend. And just remember that. But it's what's in your mind. It's really not what day of the week it is. It's what day you think it is. Yeah. Imagine if, like I keep telling my story about my wife, if every time I walk into a bedroom in our house and somebody was sleeping and I thought, "Oh, they're dead," what would that do to me? But if you go in and say, "Oh, they're asleep, I'll get them up or I won't get them up," what a difference that makes in your body. It's peaceful, it's calm, it's okay. But when it's tragedy and loss, yeah, you suffer from it. And that's something else. You don't have to suffer. You could say, "How do I use this? How do I use this to make me a better person, to help other people?" That used to drive me nuts as a kid. When my parents would say, "You know, something good will come of this." They were always telling me I was going to learn more. But I didn't like that. Because I wasn't happy. Who wants to learn from what makes you unhappy? But ultimately, when it did teach you, it gave you happiness. And it meant something to you. And you weren't afraid of it anymore. And you were helping other patients or people, even before I was a doctor, those things. So depends on where you grow up, who you know, what your parents have lived through, what your teachers are like, what books you read. Yeah, what I'm looking at right now is
television, not television, is the computer screen. Hypnosis health info. How do you want your life to grow? See, if you see cancer as growth, how about helping your life grow? Yeah. Because they got in touch with me if I would join them in helping people with cancer. Yeah, here's my name. Yeah, here's my quote to them. Bernard Siegel, last month, September. When you have the inspiration, magic happens. And then this fellow Roger, who's going to start this organization, and the magic does happen. He's telling that to everybody and to me. And the magic does happen. So remember, do what makes you happy. But that's not being selfish, okay? That doesn't mean go rob the bank. It means what can you do to contribute to the growth and beauty and happiness and health of the world? How will it benefit you, your family, and the world? And once you do that, then expect to get benefits in return. And they can be a lot of things, you know, from being rich by winning the lottery, or to getting a new job or anything else. So do what makes you happy, what feels right. And don't be selfish. When I say what feels right, it's how can I contribute love to the world. Okay, thank you all.